Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. Brad Young sitting in today on a lovely Tuesday afternoon. Glad you are with us today because we're having a good time here. And as always, flying the plane, Mr. Brad Range, good to see you, sir.
I am glad to be back.
And Ryan Wiggins, thanks for being here.
No problem.
And in the last segment, we were doing Wiggins America, which was so popular, so overwhelmingly enjoyable, enthralling, and intellectually stimulating that we decided to carry this over into this segment. So what's next on Wiggins America?
Okay, this is part two. So this is another legal case that I wanted to bring to you because it involves the workplace and some shenanigans.
I do employment law, by the way.
So I thought, well, you'd know better than anybody. So this is a former employee of the San Francisco District Attorney's Office.
Okay.
Now, not directly going to affect you as much as the universal basic income of St. Louis would, but maybe indirectly if you were to do what he did. So he is a former employee, San Francisco District Attorney's Office. He is suing his workplace for wrongful termination because he, in January, hit reply all.
Uh-oh.
And accidentally sent a sexually explicit email to his entire office.
So
now, that's the headline.
Hold on.
But when
this
you
is loaded.
When you read what he said,
yes,
and the way this played out, you go, okay. So in an email thread planning an event commemorating his buddy, or no, commemorating Matthew Shepard, a gay student at University of Wyoming, which really that part of this is getting mentioned, but it doesn't really have anything to do with it. This guy named Jovan Thomas, he sent his coworkers a message, quote, "What color panties you have on," unquote.
Ooh, okay.
Now, people said, well, does this have anything to do with that? It didn't. The lawsuit on Friday, at least according to him, it didn't.
Yeah.
The lawsuit filed on Friday, Thomas's lawyers claimed that the original message was intended just for his friend who was burying his father in New Zealand. He's good enough friends with this guy that he sent a really, really off-color remark. What he says was, hoping to cheer up his friend who is distraught and grieving the death of his father, the plaintiff intended to send this text or message to his friend as a jokey question of the sort that the plaintiff had sent his friend on occasion in the past. So the lawsuit describes the comment as a, quote, whimsical comment.
Whimsical.
Whimsical comment. That was part of the plaintiff's standard jocular repertoire with his buddy, and claimed that the email had no sexual, off-color, obscene, misogynistic, or sexist meaning or intent, simply intended as a goofy non sequitur just to his friend.
Correct.
Sent reply all by accident. Now, the case, if you're wondering what the case is, seconds after the email, he realized he had done it. He realized, I just said, what color are your underwear to the entire office? And he sent a follow-up email attempting to explain their mark. He said, while texting back and forth with my fraternity brother, I sent a very inappropriate email. The email was meant as a joke to him. He also sincerely apologized to his coworkers and said, please know this is not who I am as a person, he gets into all this stuff. And I carry myself with respect and dignity, especially. Another follow-up email from the DA, because remember, this is not just a workplace. This is the San Francisco District Attorney's Office. The assistant DA said that the matter is being handled by the administration and instructed other employees to delete Thomas's first message. His case is that after he was fired, he was told that there was no code of conduct violation and that he would be okay. So my question for you, Brad, is throughout all of this, is any of this grounds for termination? And then does he have a case in saying, but you told me that I wouldn't be?
Right. Well, let's break this down to some extent. Okay?
There's a lot going on.
There's
here.
A lot to unpack. First of all, California has some degree of what's called employment at will. What that means is that an employer can terminate the employment of any employee for any non-discriminatory reason. Same as in Missouri, same as in Illinois. So in other words, you don't have a right to your job. You have the right to terminate that. One of the discrimination elements under California law, though, is making someone else feel uncomfortable based upon issues that may deal with sexuality. So even though he didn't intend it to be offensive, he didn't intend it to even go to the audience that it went to, the question isn't how it was intended. The question is how it was received. Let me completely change the facts. If his fraternity brother he thought was in the next room and he was going to open the door and moon his fraternity brother, but instead it's the door to the conference room where they're having a ladies meeting and he moons all the ladies, he can say, "Oh, sorry, I meant that for my fraternity brother. I didn't know you were in here." The effect would be the same. Okay. So California law, unlike Missouri, is much more strict when it comes to, is what you did objectionable in terms of the hearer or the recipient of the email, not the intent for which it was sent. So I would think for the termination, the employer would have to be able to come up with some employee that said, you know what, when he asked me what color are my panties, it really offended me. I was afraid for my life. I thought that I was going to be molested. I thought, you know, X, Y, Z. I shouldn't say X, Y, Z because that means something else. but for whatever reason, they'd have to show that there was an impact in order to demonstrate it. The other thing that goes into effect on this is as follows. What kind of employee was this? Okay. Mm-hmm. If this was an employee that had all kinds of employment problems and this was the proverbial straw that broke the camel's back, all of that comes into evidence at the wrongful termination. So the employer can say, look, you're a liar, you were a cheater, you were a bum, and those were your good points. And we were just keeping you around until you asked all the staff, what color are your panties? And that was it. Hey, pal, you got to go.
And it was same day that they fired him.
Right. So that,
well,
to me,
that's part of it too. I won't get into that yet. But
okay, so that could also be part of this analysis too. We don't know what kind of employee he was. So whenever I'm informing employers about how to terminate employees, which is something I do on a daily basis, I always want to know what conduct did this employee do before this incident? Was he a stellar? Because it makes it very hard if they've got all of these glowing reviews, best employee ever, and then you fire them for something innocuous, then it becomes, was this discriminatory or not? So those are the issues that go into play. I know it's not terribly exciting, interesting, funny, or enjoyable, but that's the answer.
Well, here's a little bit of a twist on his story that really the suit is not based on the things that you were saying, because I think he probably knows he would lose on those things.
Mm-hmm.
But he says that the same day that happened, they pulled him into the office and they laid him off. And he was told that there would be no disciplinary action after the layoff. But then I guess they went ahead and made the layoff permanent and they fired him.
Right.
So is there a case for him there?
Well, here's what we don't know. Anytime I get a call from an employer client of mine that says, here's an employee who's done something wrong, what do? The first thing I always say is send him home with pay. Send them home right now with pay. Get them out of the office, send them home, and conduct your investigation. Because you don't want the subject of the investigation going around and telling everybody, hey, psst, if the boss says something to you, you know, put in a good word for me. So you send them home, but you pay them. But then you do an investigation, and you find out who said what, how is it received, how is it interpreted, how is it applied. So it could be in this situation, they sent them home, did an investigation, and somebody, you know, Mary Lou in accounting said, oh my goodness, this triggered me. I was sexually assaulted 5 years ago. And when he asked me that, I was triggered by that. And that, boom, that's all it takes. So really what we don't know is what happened that's not in the story.
Mm-hmm.
But those are the things that go on behind the scenes when you've got an investigation into employee conduct.
I would think that not only is context everything, because like you said, the guy's never been a problem. And then obviously, oh, shoot, I really messed up here. Sorry, everybody. I didn't mean to do that. That's one thing. If he had constantly been kind of walking the line and you go, well, old Jovan's doing it again or whatever. But that would be one thing.
old Jovan.
Good old Jovan.
But I would wonder, based on your explanation of harassment in an office, what constitutes harassment? Because there are a lot of things, like you said, if it's in the eye of the beholder, The beholder could say anything is harassment. So you could come up with, and I'm going to make up a scenario here that's clearly not based on any experience that I've ever had.
Okay, buckle up. Here goes. Buckle up.
Let's say that somebody, and this was not me, but let's say somebody in an office wore a Halloween costume as a man. Again, this was not me, but I did see this happen. Wore a Halloween costume that had fake cleavage. He was dressed up as a girl and had fake cleavage in the costume. Could somebody say that was offensive to me on any number of grounds? Whether it be, well, you dressed up as a woman, you're not supposed to do that, you're hurting trans feelings, whatever, you know, nowadays. Sure. Or he's not a woman and he dressed up as one and was showing something that he should not have shown, you know, whatever it is. It seems like the eye of the beholder is pretty wide.
Yeah, and apparently the cleavage was as well.
It was. But, yeah, it was pretty low.
But Brad Range, before I answer the question, didn't it sound weirdly specific,
weirdly
the fact
specific.
Pattern? Like he said, oh, like, I've got a friend of mine. I've actually heard of this.
Totally not me.
You know,
I have
a friend. You noticed how when he was, and you couldn't see this necessarily unless you're watching the stream, but when Ryan was describing it, he was showing exactly where on his own body this costume was cutting down to. So
yeah.
I just think it's weirdly specific. But to answer your question.
I will guarantee you that I basically dress up as one thing every single year. It's Captain Kirk because I got a shirt.
Oh, I would love to do that.
Yeah, it's easy.
I would love to
it's
do that.
It's that or Mary Todd Lincoln.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that too. Okay, never mind. I'll take it back. I did dress up as a woman once, apparently, and it was on this show.
Mary Todd Lincoln.
It was Mary Todd Lincoln.
Great.
Yeah.
Wow. So here's the answer to the question. The favorite word, there's one word that is the favorite word of every attorney. One word. Favorite word.
Money.
It is. Okay. There are two words that are the favorite of every attorney. Money and reasonable or reasonableness. Okay. So the question becomes, because that's what a jury is going to decide. The question becomes, would it be reasonable for someone to be offended by a Halloween costume that showed cleavage? In the context of a Halloween costume, the attorney would argue it's not reasonable to be offended because it is known to be, to use your term that you used earlier, in a jocular situation with Halloween, okay? But if somebody just gets an email that says, what color are your panties? All right, if they get that email, uh-huh. Right? There's no context. There's no context. So then you could say it is reasonable that a person would be offended by that without having the context of the purpose for the email.
Objection, my client did not say it in that voice.
Okay.
it was an email.
Yeah.
It's whatever
yeah, yeah.
voice the person
exactly.
heard it in.
Hey, and so that makes a whole lot of sense. The word reasonable seems like that's the reason there are court cases.
You got it. Because everyone's definition of reasonable is different.
And last question, this would be a really quick one. But let's say, and this is another hypothetical, let's say a senator was hiding gold bars in his jacket
okay.
at home.
Oh, that could never. That's a crazy example.
Should he resign or not?
That would never happen. Where do these gold bars come from?
Egypt.
Because, I was going to say, because if they're just his gold bars.
Right.
Then that there's nothing
yeah,
wrong.
You're right.
It's
if
dumb.
He's just hiding them,
or were they in the glove box of say, and I'm just going to be crazy and make up an example in a Mercedes Benz that was given by representatives of the Egyptian government.
Let's say that it is.
Okay.
Should he resign?
Well, I think
that's what's on Fox News right now.
Well, I think in the words of the framers of our Constitution, actually the Declaration of Independence. That is self-evident, is that the answer is yes, he should resign.
And if I were arguing for the plaintiff here, I would say that is unreasonable.
It's unreasonable? Yeah, I don't know how those gold bars got there.
Are my wives.
I put on a few pounds. I took my jacket to the tailor. It comes back with gold bars.
Yeah. I'm the luckiest senator in the world.
Wow. I don't know how they got there.
It's like when they pull the cop over, or the cops pull the guy over and they find drugs on him. He's like, that's not mine.
That's not mine.
What?
What?
There's what in the trunk? That's a ton of heroin.
That's right. I don't know how it got there.
I hate heroin.
You know what? I don't know how it got there. It's just a mistake. Must have been planted.
Well, thank you.
Yeah,
you cleared up a lot for me.
That's good. And you'll get my bill. Speaking of money.
I'm sure I will.
You'll get my bill.
Billable hours. That's another phrase they like.
Oh, billable hours. I know, but it's drudgery to try to fill out your timesheets every day. You know what's not drudgery, though? is listening to the Annie Fry Show. We've got more. You love my transitions, don't you?
Yeah, the best. I live for them.
I got to come up with witty transitions.
You know what's not drudgery? Yeah, he's done it again. He's amazing. He's listening
more,
to this show.
More amazing witticisms next on the Annie Fry Show. Brad Young sitting in today, 97.1 FM Talk. You know, I don't think we can.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Beat the last segment for, as you say, jocularity.
That is what I say.
That's what you say.
That's my word.
Is that a real word?
Oh, yeah, it is a word.
Okay,
that's a real word.
Or is that a legal word?
Because Ryan says stuff with a straight face, and you just never know.
Like Edward, what's the guy's name that was in the
Scissorhands.
Not that.
See?
The Glass Onion.
Oh, geez.
That was the last Daniel Craig movie where he is
that's
the
good movie.
Investigator. And Edward... I'm dropping his last name. He also played the Hulk in the very first Hulk movie.
I keep wanting to say Furlong.
Edward Norton.
Yeah, he would just be making up words. And they were not completely and totally nonsensical words. And he was just making them up. And finally, Daniel Craig had to call him on it.
Knives Out.
Yeah.
That's the name.
It was the Glass Onion. Yeah. That was a great movie, by the way. Hey, I want to talk in this segment about this because we've had a lot of litigation coming through the Eighth Circuit recently. And the Eighth Circuit is based right here in St. Louis.
Okay.
And it's been important litigation. It hasn't been getting a lot of news because this is a crazy news cycle. In fact, several folks on the live chat today have been talking about how Annie Fry was gone on like one of the busiest two weeks of the year is when she was gone. So a lot of this is getting overshadowed, but one of the things that has been a real pet peeve of mine has been President Biden's attempt to eliminate student loan debt. Mm-hmm. It's been a big problem for me because from a policy perspective, if you think about it, there is no elimination of debt, right? It's a transfer of debt.
Right.
It's a transfer of debt from John Smith, who borrows the student loans, to all of us, including the people who never went to college. Mm-hmm. And so it's a transfer of the debt, and ultimately it's being transferred, and the Chinese are buying it because they're the ones, and among others, that are buying our T-bills and treasury notes. So it's not an elimination, it's a transfer of debt. But then secondly, just the idea that you make a contract, you borrow the money, you go to college, you get the degree, and then you don't want to have to pay it back. And to me, I just have a big policy problem with all of those things.
Policy problem, yes. Personally, it sounds like a great deal.
Yeah.
If you're the one doing it, man,
yeah.
What a deal you just found yourself in.
Right.
That's like a indicative of like a bigger issue we have in our society. I mean, you could put whatever issue in you want here. It's the lack of responsibility for your own actions. You want to be free from the consequences of your actions. That's one of the things that I think of whenever it comes to the abortion question. People are like, it's my body, it's my choice. And it's like, I agree, you had a choice for the most part, you know, save rape and incest. But you had a choice.
Right.
Now you're talking about the consequences. You don't want to deal with the consequences of the choice you made. Same thing with student loan debt. You made the choice to go to school. You made the choice to pursue that degree path. You made the choice to go into that career field. And then now you also made the choice to pay that off. And now you're like, I don't actually want those consequences. I just want the degree and not to pay anything.
Correct. But you know, the part of that my body, my choice argument that falls apart is you're right. It is your body. It is your choice. But at the point you made a poor choice, the consequence of that is now not your body.
It's
a
new
separate
person.
DNA. It has separate and distinct DNA from your body. So the my body, my choice may apply up until the time of conception. But from that point forward, it's not your body. And it shouldn't be your choice.
Yeah.
For Wiggins America, I'll do a segment that has a theme to a number of stories. One of them I reported on from a California segment. You know, I play the little California sounder. Was that one of the policies of, I think this was San Francisco, was that they were going to start, and you've probably heard about this because it's been going on for a year or two, that they were going to start giving out crack pipes for free to drug addicts. Well, their reasoning was, well, it's because we don't want them to kill themselves using dirty needles and stuff like that. So we're going to give them the paraphernalia for free so that it's clean. Well, you are removing all of the consequence for making very, very, yes, very bad choices.
Yes.
And you can have all the sympathy in the world you want, but what they have done now, the news story was, that they've made government-sanctioned crack houses. Then that people don't go to them or around them because that's where all the drug addicts hang out because they just give free drug stuff.
Sure. And talk about, you know, the word and the phrase being an enabler, where you enable someone to have bad conduct, bad behavior. How is that any different? How is that any, by giving drug users crack pipes and needles, how is that any different from saying to your buddy who's an alcoholic, you know, because I know you're probably going to go drink whiskey, I'm just going to give you all the beer you want to drink. Just all the beer you want to drink. I'm just going to give it to you. You're enabling that person's addiction, and you're furthering the damage to their body by enabling them to do that.
Yeah, and that is now state policy in very, very liberal areas.
But that was the issue that really came to pass, even in a greater sense, talking about enabling, was there was one of the cases at the U.S. Supreme Court this year was a case out of Oregon where the city of Oregon, Grants Pass, Oregon, I believe was the name of the city, where they passed anti-camping statutes in because they had homeless people. Because all of the liberal do-gooder people in Oregon said, yeah, we want all the homeless people to come here and we'll take care of them. Well, the consequence of that was feces in the streets, drug use, rampant sexual activity, open and obvious to everyone, and all of the ramifications that go along with that. And so Grants Pass said, you know what, we're going to pass an anti-camping statute. No camping on public grounds. I don't care who you are. We're not going to do it. And if you do, we're going to fine you and take you to the pokey. And it went up to the Supreme Court. Supreme Court ruled it's not cruel and unusual punishment to punish someone for this. But cities have to be able to regulate the overtaking of their cities as a result of progressive policies. And we had that right here in St. Louis. Remember all the tents and the encampment that was on City Hall? It looked crazy. And it was terrible. There was defecation on the steps of City Hall, which some would call redundant. But yet at the same point in time, it was really an eyesore for the city. And now I did hear that Mayor Jones said that because of the Supreme Court's decision, we'll take some action on it. But there's no way that the city's going to take any action on that because they're run by progressives.
Nothing significant. Yeah,
no.
It could be window dressing. But yeah, that's the problem is that here's a weird turn, too. That issue is getting worse. The homeless problem is not just getting worse in downtown cities. It is there, too. But it is filtering out to the suburbs. No matter where you go, you're seeing more and more homeless people everywhere.
Yeah, there are people. I see panhandlers. I don't know. Is that still okay to say panhandlers?
I'm going to sue you, but yeah, you can say
it. Okay, thanks, Ryan. It's all subjective, right?
Yeah.
Is it reasonable?
Is it reasonable as a panhandler?
but every time I get off the interstate now to go home, there was never people there before. There's people in downtown O'Fallon, but you know, in our little downtown area, they're sitting there, sleeping there. You see the blankets or whatever, and it's like, this is all new because we're not a big town, we're a small town, and now we've got a homeless population either moving in or unable to afford things to live in the town, and that's just what they have.
Well, the city dealt with this recently, several years ago. And again, Beavis Shock, who I just mentioned, Attorney Beavis Shock, in the last hour we talked about it. But he represented an individual, I believe it was in Kirkwood or Webster Groves, who was panhandling. The city punished him. He sued. He won. He got $200,000, $300,000 for a violation of his First Amendment rights, of the panhandler's First Amendment rights, because it was freedom of speech. Now, I'm not going to dive too deeply into this, but the reason why I disagree with that is cigarettes. Let me tell you, explain what I mean. You can't have cigarette advertising on television. If you have beer advertising on television, you can't show them drinking. Why is that not a violation of the First Amendment? Because Supreme Court has consistently held that commercial speech can be regulated. In the idea of beer, you can't show someone drinking beer in a commercial, can be regulated. And commercial speech can even be banned or prohibited, like cigarettes. Can't show them in TV, can't show them in advertising, magazines. So you can even ban commercial speech if it's necessary for the health and safety and protection of the citizenry. So why is a panhandler, that's the definition of commercial speech. Give me money, is what they say, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's commercial speech. So I don't understand why in that case in Kirkwood, that speech wasn't prohibited. The individual who won that case bought a house, he paid cash, he drives a very nice car, and he continues to panhandle.
Really?
Yes. And so he continues to this day. His job is a panhandler, and he owns his own house free and clear. He owns his own car. He drives, he parks away from where he panhandles, and he panhandles for a living. So the question becomes, why can't that speech be prohibited? And I can't, for the life of me, understand a valid argument against that position.
Yeah, it's a good question. So before we break here, just want to let you know that it does look like Kamala Harris is speaking live. This is her first campaign rally. And Brad, whether you want to cut to this now or you want to do it after the break, you know.
Let's go to a break and then come back to this, because I want to make sure that I'm okay. If she starts giggling, I have to prepare myself for that.
Yeah, well, Brad's got the dumb button.
Okay, so. I got to prepare myself for the giggling, because that might trigger me.
Okay.
And it would be reasonable to be triggered by hearing Kamala Harris giggle. So we're going to take a break. I'm going to prepare myself. We'll come back. And if necessary, we'll go to Kamala Harris's press conference. 97.1 FM Talk. Wow. Brad Range, good job on bumper music, my friend. Hey, I want to give everyone a trigger warning. We're going to go live now to Vice President Kamala Harris, who's giving remarks about the endorsement she received from President Joe Biden.
I could really speak at length, but a few words about our incredible President Joe Biden. It has truly been one of the greatest honors of my life to serve as vice president to our President Joe Biden. Joe's legacy of accomplishment over his entire career and over the past 3.5 years is unmatched in modern history. In one term, think about it, in one term as president, he has already surpassed the legacy of most presidents who served 2 terms in office. And I know we are all deeply, deeply grateful for his continuing service to our nation. And it is my great honor to have Joe Biden's endorsement in this race. Wisconsin, I am told as of this morning that we have earned the support of enough delegates to secure the Democratic nomination. And I am so very honored, and I pledge to you, I will spend the coming weeks continuing to unite our party so that we are ready to win in November. So, friends, we have 105 days until Election Day. And in that time, we've got some work to do. But we're not afraid of hard work. We like hard work, don't we? And we will win this election. Yes, we will. So as Leah told you, before I was elected vice president, before I was elected United States Senator, I was elected Attorney General of the state of California, and I was a courtroom prosecutor before then. And in those roles, I took on perpetrators of all kinds. Predators who abused women, fraudsters who ripped off consumers, cheaters who broke the rules for their own gain. So hear me when I say, I know Donald Trump's type. You, I will proudly put my record against his any day of the week. I was found liable for committing sexual abuse. As Attorney General of California, I took on the big Wall Street banks and held them accountable for fraud. Donald Trump was just found guilty of fraud on 34 counts. But let's also make no mistake, this campaign is not just about us versus Donald Trump. This campaign is about who we fight for. This is about who we fight for. Just look at how we are running our campaigns. So Donald Trump is relying on support from billionaires and big corporations. And he is trading access in exchange for campaign contributions. A couple months ago, y'all saw that a couple months ago at Mar-a-Lago, he literally promised big oil companies, big oil lobbyists, he would do their bidding for $1 billion in campaign donations. On the other hand, we are running a people-powered campaign. Some breaking news. We just had the best 24 hours of grassroots fundraising in presidential campaign history. People-powered campaign, that is how you know we will be a people-first presidency. And Wisconsin, this campaign is also about two different visions for our nation. One, where we are focused on the future. The other, focused on the past. We.
All right. She said she'll put her record up against Donald Trump's record.
Well, we were cutting live to the address from Vice President Kamala Harris, and I want to correct something. Listen, I'm all about accuracy. And in reading through some of the notes in or some of the postings, rather, in the live chat, someone misquoted. I want to correct this because there is no truth to the rumor that Kamala Harris just said that she knows sexual predators because she's dated men just like that. Now, there is no truth to that.
Yeah,
that we know.
Fact check.
We have to fact check
Somebody said that in the stream. We said, no.
You can't say that.
We don't know that for sure.
I don't know that it was really dating. I mean, does Willie Brown count for that? I don't know, because she dated Willie Brown in California.
Right. Yeah, no.
Was that dating?
I don't know.
I don't know if that constitutes
dating. We'll reach
out
to the campaign and ask.
We'll have to dive into that. But she also said this, and this is what I want to ask here for the collective input. And I'm quoting, I wrote it down, quote, "President Biden has already surpassed the legacy of most two-term presidents," unquote. What is that legacy? Honestly, what is that legacy that she's, because I'm hearing this a lot in the last couple of days. People keep saying he's the most popular president ever. Well, if he's the most popular president ever, why is he stepping down?
What I'm learning throughout this process, and I've learned a lot, is that it seems like campaigns sometimes say things that aren't true.
What? What? Ryan Wiggins?
Well,
what?
Listen, hear me out, because when I was listening to the Biden campaign Sunday morning, they were telling me he has no intention of stepping down. And then he did. And so I thought, hang on a second. I think that was a lie. I think that they just lied, or they didn't know what they were talking about, or they're trying to spin something. And I'm very naive when it comes to these things. But that, to me, was an example of exactly what I just said, that sometimes does happen with campaigns.
You know, what's wild to me is we don't have to sit here and list out all the things that have gone wrong under Biden's administration, what his legacy is or whatever, because our listeners are smart. They know.
You're still living it.
Yeah.
Right
you
now.
You go to the grocery store. You buy stuff. You know that your dollar doesn't go as far as it used to. You know that it's harder to fill up your tank. You know at the end of the month, there's a little bit more month than there is money. You know all of that. We don't have to tell you that.
Right.
They sat there and they told us during his entire administration, which Kamala Harris is a part of, mind you, that you don't even know what you're talking about. Things are good. Look how great the stock market is.
Exactly.
It's like, okay, yeah, but I can't pay my bills.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Well, to me, it raises two issues, particularly now that she is the anointed candidate. It raises two big issues that neither one of them, I think, are very favorable. Number one, the issue is that we really don't know up to this point why Biden decided to step down. Now, we're supposed to hear from him tomorrow
because
night.
Because he's courageous and heroic.
Well, he's going to clear all this up tomorrow night. He's going to have coverage. It's going to start Wednesday night at 7 p.m. Central Time. We're going to have coverage of it here on 97.1. And he's going to explain why he's stepping out of the race, what he'll continue to focus on as he closes out his presidency.
Right.
So he's giving a speech that's tomorrow night. That's Wednesday, 7 p.m. You can hear it right here on 97.1. We'll have the whole coverage. We'll have Fox's coverage of it. And then we'll go back to regular programming when he's done.
But it raises two equally unpopular consequences from this. Number one, if Biden is dropping out of the race because he's no longer politically viable, then why do we have a primary? 14.6 million people voted for him as president. And if he just wiped it all out because he thinks he can't win, then basically that's the most anti-democratic move that's ever occurred in the history of our country, other than trying to remove Donald Trump from the ballot.
Wait, now you're confusing me again, because I thought I had this figured out. Kamala Harris just told me that they're running a people-powered campaign.
Yeah.
So you're saying that the people didn't choose? No, you're right. I'm piecing this together now. They didn't choose her.
Exactly. No one's chosen her. Zero. Nobody. All right.
So some power brokers did.
So number one, a couple of power brokers did. But number one, if he stepped down because he thought I cannot win, then he just negated the entire primary with his Twitter announcement. Okay. Number one. If it's not because he can't win, but because of his health, then really the question becomes, have you been lying to us for the past 3 years about your competency to run the office of the presidency? And if so, does that trigger the 25th Amendment, which requires him to be removed from office if he is incapable of performing the duties of the president?
Well, you've got to ask the question, if it is because of his health, is he capable of performing the duties of president? Like, which one is more difficult? Being president of the United States or running for president of the United States, which one's more consequential for everybody? And I think that's being president.
Right. Being president is far harder. I mean, campaigning for president, you just show up and give a few speeches. Okay. That's not a big deal. Somebody else writes them. You just stand up and give them. Unless someone's shooting at your head. like we saw last weekend, right? Or the weekend before last. But the reality is those are the only two consequences, or those are the only two options for President Biden stepping down. Either A, he didn't think that he could win, which negates democracy at its core, or number two, he's incapable of doing it, which means your office has been lying to us. Remember, Robert Hur said in his investigation of the documents case with President Biden that he didn't prosecute because he's a man with terrible memory and he comes across as a feeble old man.
Yeah.
I mean, he did one step short of saying, get off my lawn. And so if that's the reality, then you've been lying to us and it triggers the 25th Amendment.
And she's in a weird spot now, too, for the next 3 months. She's got to be saying he's fine to be president, which he's not.
Right.
And no, he's not good to be the candidate because I am.
Right.
What are you saying?
Those are mutually exclusive, and I don't see how you honestly take that position with a straight face. Hey, Brad Young sitting in for the vacationing Annie Fry. We've got one more hour of the award-winning Annie Fry show. It's award-winning because it's my favorite show. So it's got the J. Bradley Young seal of approval and award. So it is award-winning, and we've got more award-winning show coming up next. 97.1 FM Talk. Harris's press conference. 97.1 FM Talk. Wow. Brad Range, good job on bumper music, my friend. Hey, I want to give everyone a trigger warning. We're going to go live now to Vice President Kamala Harris, who's giving remarks about the endorsement she received from President Joe Biden.
I could really speak at length, but a few words about our incredible President Joe Biden. It has truly been one of the greatest honors of my life to serve as vice president to our President Joe Biden. Joe's legacy of accomplishment over his entire career and over the past 3.5 years is unmatched in modern history. In one term, think about it, in one term as president, he has already surpassed the legacy of most presidents who served 2 terms in office. And I know we are all deeply, deeply grateful for his continuing service to our nation. And it is my great honor to have Joe Biden's endorsement in this race. So, Wisconsin, I am told as of this morning that we have earned the support of enough delegates to secure the Democratic nomination. And I pledge to you, I will spend the coming weeks continuing to unite our party so that we are ready to win in November. So, friends, we have 105 days until Election Day. And in that time, we've got some work to do. But we're not afraid of hard work. We like hard work, don't we? We will win this election. Yes, we will. So as Leah told you, before I was elected vice president, before I was elected United States Senator, I was elected Attorney General of the state of California, and I was a courtroom prosecutor before then. And in those roles, I took on perpetrators of all kinds. Predators who abused women, fraudsters who ripped off consumers, cheaters who broke the rules for their own gain. So hear me when I say, I know Donald Trump's type.
promise you, I will proudly put my record against his any day of the week. He was found liable for committing sexual abuse. As Attorney General of California, I took on the big Wall Street banks and held them accountable for fraud. Donald Trump was just found guilty of fraud on 34 counts. But let's also make no mistake, this campaign is not just about us versus Donald Trump. This campaign is about who we fight for. This is about who we fight for. Just look at how we are running our campaigns. So Donald Trump is relying on support from billionaires and big corporations. And he is trading access in exchange for campaign contributions. A couple months ago, y'all saw that a couple months ago at Mar-a-Lago, he literally promised big oil companies, big oil lobbyists, he would do their bidding for $1 billion in campaign donations. On the other hand, we are running a people-powered campaign. Some breaking news. We just had the best 24 hours of grassroots fundraising in presidential campaign history. People-powered campaign, that is how you know we will be a people-first presidency. And Wisconsin, this campaign is also about two different visions for our nation. One, where we are focused on the future. The other, focused on the past. We.
All right. She said she'll put her record up against Donald Trump's record.
Well, we were cutting live to the address from Vice President Kamala Harris, and I want to correct something. Listen, I'm all about accuracy. And in reading through some of the notes in or some of the postings, rather, in the live chat, someone misquoted. I want to correct this because there is no truth to the rumor that Kamala Harris just said that she knows sexual predators because she's dated men just like that. Now, there is no truth to that.
Yeah.
That we know.
Fact check.
We have to fact check that.
Somebody said that in the stream. We said, no.
No.
You can't say that. We don't know that for sure.
I don't know that it was really dating. I mean, does Willie Brown count for that? I don't know, because she dated Willie Brown in California.
Right. Yeah. No.
Was that dating?
I don't know.
I don't know if that constitutes dating.
We'll reach out to the campaign and ask.
We'll have to dive into that. But she also said this, and this is what I want to ask here for the collective input. She, and I'm quoting, I wrote it down, quote, President Biden has already surpassed the legacy of most two-term presidents, unquote. What is that legacy? Honestly, what is that legacy that she's, because I'm hearing this a lot in the last couple of days. The people keep saying he's the most popular president ever. Well, if he's the most popular president ever, why is he stepping down?
What I'm learning throughout this process, and I've learned a lot, is that it seems like campaigns sometimes say things that aren't true.
What? What, Ryan Wiggins?
Well,
what?
Listen, hear me out, because when I was listening to the Biden campaign Sunday morning, they were telling me he has no intention of stepping down. And then he did, and so I thought, hang on a second, I think that was a lie. I think that they just lied, or they didn't know what they were talking about, or they're trying to spin something. And I'm very naive when it comes to these things, but that to me was an example of exactly what I just said, that sometimes does happen with campaigns.
Hmm.
You know, what's wild to me is we don't have to sit here and list out all the things that have gone wrong under Biden's administration, what his legacy is or whatever, because our listeners are smart. They know.
You're still living it.
Yeah.
Right
you
now.
You go to the grocery store. You buy stuff. You know that your dollar doesn't go as far as it used to. You know that it's harder to fill up your tank. You know at the end of the month, there's a little bit more month than there is money. You know all of that. We don't have to tell you that.
Right.
They sat there and they told us during his entire administration, which Kamala Harris is a part of, mind you, that you don't even know what you're talking about. Things are good. Look how great the stock market is.
Exactly.
It's like, okay, yeah, but I can't pay my bills.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Well, to me, it raises two issues, particularly now that she is the anointed candidate. It raises two big issues that neither one of them, I think, are very favorable. Number one, the issue is that we really don't know up to this point why Biden decided to step down. Now, we're supposed to hear from him tomorrow night.
Because he's courageous and heroic.
Well, he's going to clear all this up tomorrow night. He's going to have coverage. It's going to start Wednesday night at 7 p.m. Central Time. We're going to have coverage of it here on 97.1. And he's going to explain why he's stepping out of the race, what he'll continue to focus on as he closes out his presidency.
Right.
So he's giving a speech that's tomorrow night. That's Wednesday, 7 p.m. You can hear it right here on 97.1. We'll have the whole coverage. We'll have Fox's coverage of it. And then we'll go back to regular programming when he's done.
But it raises two equally unpopular consequences from this. Number one, if Biden is dropping out of the race because he's no longer politically viable, then why do we have a primary? 14.6 million people voted for him as president. And if he just wiped it all out because he thinks he can't win, then basically that's the most anti-democratic move that's ever occurred in the history of our country, other than trying to remove Donald Trump from the ballot.
Wait, now you're confusing me again, because I thought I had this figured out. Kamala Harris just told me that they're running a people-powered campaign.
Yeah.
So you're saying that the people didn't choose? No, you're right. I'm piecing this together now. They didn't choose her.
Exactly. No one's chosen her. Zero. All right? Nobody. All right.
So, well, some power brokers did.
So number one, a couple of power brokers did. But number one, if he stepped down because he thought I cannot win, then he just negated the entire primary with his Twitter announcement. Okay. Number one. If it's not because he can't win, but because of his health, then really the question becomes, have you been lying to us for the past 3 years about your competency to run the office of the presidency? And if so, does that trigger the 25th Amendment, which requires him to be removed from office if he is incapable of performing the duties of the president?
Well, you've got to ask the question, if it is because of his health, is he capable of performing the duties of president? Like, which one is more difficult? Being president of the United States or running for president of the United States, which one's more consequential for everybody? And I think that's being president.
Right. Being president is far harder. I mean, campaigning for president, you just show up and give a few speeches. Okay. That's not a big deal. Somebody else writes them. You just stand up and give them, unless someone's shooting at your head, like we saw last weekend, right? Or the weekend before last. But the reality is, those are the only two consequences, or those are the only two options for President Biden stepping down. Either A, he didn't think that he could win, which negates democracy at its core, or number two, he's incapable of doing it, which means your office has been lying to us. Remember, Robert Hur said in his investigation of the documents case with President Biden that he didn't prosecute because he's a man with terrible memory and he comes across as a feeble old man.
Yeah.
I mean, he did one step short of saying, get off my lawn. And so if that's the reality, then you've been lying to us and it triggers the 25th Amendment.
And she's in a weird spot now, too, for the next 3 months. She's got to be saying he's fine to be president, which he's not.
Right.
And no, he's not good to be the candidate because I am.
Right.
What are you saying?
Those are mutually exclusive, and I don't see how you honestly take that position with a straight face. Hey, Brad Young sitting in for the vacationing Annie Fry. We've got one more hour of the award-winning Annie Fry show. It's award-winning because it's my favorite show. So it's got the J. Bradley Young seal of approval and award. So it is award-winning, and we've got more award-winning show coming up next, 97.1 FM Talk.